So what does it take to run for political office? It takes some smarts, sure, definitely some savvy. But above all else, it takes money. Lots and lots of money.
In your first getting started, you're going to need to raise about $500,000 overall.
That's Jeff Crosby, a Democratic political consultant in Texas.
You want to raise $50,000 coming out of the gate so you can get all the other parts of your campaign rolling. And that would be a website, that would be hiring staff, that would be maybe doing a poll.
And to raise this money, you need to find the right people.
If you're running in a race, hopefully you've already done some initial work and you have commitments from people to give you your upfront money that you need to get started. You need to find, at minimum, a campaign manager, someone to help you with fundraising, and then someone who does pretty much everything else. That's how you get started. That's how you hit the ground running.
And from there, it's all about how to spend what you have.
You should spend about 50% of it on paid media, television ads, internet ads. That's going to take about 50%. And then about another 25 or 30% you're going to spend on field, your people that go door to door. Then your other overhead items are basically headquarters rent, other staff, other consultants, and polling.
This costs a lot. And if you're in a competitive district, the numbers go up even higher. But let's say you're in a not-so-competitive district. In total, how much do you need to raise? For the numbers, we asked Sheila Krumholz. She's the executive director at the Center for Responsive Politics.
So even with a re-election rate of 97% in the House, the average winning House race cost about $1.5 million. And the average winning Senate race cost about $12 million.
Sheila told us that in the last midterm cycle, $3.8 billion were spent. And the trend here is clear.
Each cycle, we're going up, up, up. And if we spent $3.8 billion in 2014, then $4 billion is a fairly conservative prediction for 2018.
And in 2020, for the next presidential election, it's predicted $7 billion will be spent. What's your reaction?
This is Dakota from Tampa, Florida. I believe campaigns should be funded with allotted amounts, preferably with public money like other countries, but I'll settle for just not allowing dark money.
My name is Lisa. I'm from Buffalo, New York, and I absolutely believe that big donors, established donors, for example, PACs, are unfair to a newcomer trying to unseat an incumbent, especially when gerrymandering is also in play.
This is David Whalen from Saginaw, Michigan, and I believe that any candidate shouldn't be accepting big money. Money is an influence no matter what the candidates say.
This is Laura from Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. From a practical standpoint, I can't do the research to find out who funds the candidates that I vote for.
This is Lee Weber in Atlanta, Georgia. I've worked in politics for over 40 years. Money is like water. It will always find a way. Regulating the money will not solve the problem.
I'm Amy Walter, and today on The Takeaway, we follow the money in the 2018 midterm elections. Where's it all coming from? And what is it doing to our democracy?
Just follow the money.
Here's where money for election comes from primarily. Individual small donors, folks like you and you. Individual political action committees or PACs that are regulated and can give only limited amounts. The political parties and super PACs. That's a relatively newer type of fundraising vehicle that can raise and spend unlimited funds to support or attack any political campaign. And that includes TV ads, direct mail, as long as they're not coordinating with the campaign.
It is increasingly true that in the very most competitive races, the outside groups can and will spend more than all of the candidates combined.
Sheila Krumholz again.
They, of course, don't have the limits that the candidates have to contend with. They can raise unlimited sums from any source. And they can focus just on those races where they perceive the best chance to flip it or to retain that seat for their preferred party. So that is where the bulk of the super PAC and dark money nonprofit groups are aiming their firepower, at those very competitive races.
So there's been a lot of discussion recently about the Democrats who are running on a no corporate PAC pledge. And if you could help us out a little bit, first, do you have any sense of how much money corporate PACs donate to candidates in a typical cycle?
Yes. Corporate PACs make up the vast majority of PACs, political action committees. And whether we're talking about PACs or individual donations and PACs, the contributions to candidates and parties are primarily representing business interests. It overwhelms the money coming from other sources, that is, labor unions, ideological organizations, etc. So if you're missing the corporate money, you're missing the major part of the story.
So if a candidate says, I'm not going to take corporate PAC money, basically what they're saying is, of all of the money that's out there being doled out in these political action committees, they're going to miss out on pretty much the biggest pool of possible money.
Yes, except that the calculation depends on whether they're running for the House or the Senate, because the Senate candidates need to raise so much more, $12 million in the last election cycle, to have a winning campaign, that they can't depend on PACs for as large a portion of their overall kitty than the House candidates. So House candidates depend more. House members in particular, incumbents, depend more on corporate PAC donations and PAC donations generally than challengers do, and certainly far more than Senate candidates or Senate incumbents do. So if you only have to raise $1.5 million, PACs can give maximum $10,000 in an election cycle, five for the primary, five for the general. They can pack a punch. They can make up a pretty significant portion of the overall receipts for a House candidate. And House incumbent can easily, very often, make up 50% of their receipts from political action committees. But the same cannot be said of Senate candidates.
So if we look then at the corporate PACs, as you said, they make up the bulk of all of the PAC giving in this country. Do you know how much of that actually goes to Republicans versus Democrats?
The party advantage in receipts from PACs differs depending on who's in power. Money follows power. And in this case, in this current cycle, we're seeing about 63% of the business PAC money going to Republicans. That's reflective of the Republicans being in the majority in Congress and PACs giving to incumbents. We may see that soften heading into the election if more Democratic challengers are showing strength in their polling figures. So you may see some PACs start to peel off and give to challengers so that they aren't caught on election day having supported the losing candidate.
I want to talk about that individual contribution level for a minute, Sheila, because as you pointed out, people who have these big personalities and get a bunch of attention, for example, Bernie Sanders, have an ability to raise a lot of money from individuals in very small amounts. But what about your regular average candidate? I mean, have we seen over the last few years, especially with the advent of technological changes that allow individuals to just push a button on their phone and send $5 to a candidate, have we seen a meaningful increase in the number of people that are donating to candidates?
No, in fact, it's the reverse. We're seeing more money coming from fewer people. So back in 2002, when soft money was banned, a lot of money was coming from deep-pocketed donors to the parties. Fast forward to 2012, we've got the top 0.01% gave $1.6 billion. So the deep-pocketed donors are playing the biggest role. And when we fast forward to 2016, the top 0.01% gave $2.3 billion. Now, that's not just the Citizens United decision, which kind of threw wide the floodgates on money, but also another decision called McCutcheon that allowed an individual donor to give unlimited amounts. There was no longer an aggregate cap on what an individual donor could give to candidates, PACs, and parties. And then on top of that, of course, you can also give unlimited sums to super PACs and outside groups. So we're losing limits right and left here.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.